Welcome to the Oldie Literary Lunch, sponsored by Noble Caledonia, the world experts in small ship cruising.
Our next author has a modest subject which he unfurled, merely a history of the world. His formula, which he reveals here, is to delve into every single day of the year and discover what happened on that particular day. It's fascinating. But now I say I must desist. A nurse, a lager, as he reveals his amazing saga. It's time for him and my time to go. Welcome our author, Dan Snow.
Thank you. That was worthy of some of the great bards who appear in my book. It reminds me of the battle hymn of the Battle of Maldon in the 990s when the Anglo-Saxons were defeated by the Vikings, one of the great epics of English poetry. That also appears in the book. So it's interesting. Listen to Miles. It occurred to me that my book is the complete opposite, and that's what I love about nonfiction. It's what I love about history, is there are people who have spent years delving into the events of one night or a couple of hours, and there are people who have had the temerity to write about the entire history of the world. From the fall of Troy and the second century BC China to the invention of Google. And that's what I've done in this book. But I should probably let you know where it all began. Many of you saw my dad here before, but he may have transmitted the fact that our family are sort of obsessed with history. I imbibed it with my mother's milk. If you put a dot on a map in Barnes, and then you draw a 250-mile radius around that dot, I've been to every battlefield, ruined abbey, Renaissance church, museum, gallery, castle, benighted Iron Age hill settlement within that circle. And so, to be absolutely frank with you, I didn't enjoy it very much. I'd much rather have been at a water park. But then I got Stockholm syndrome, and I started to enjoy it. And now I inflict it upon my children, which is what generational trauma is all about. So I have, history has always been, and telling stories has always been a part of my family's tradition. My auntie Margaret is the standout historian of the family and arguably the English-speaking world. Margaret Macmillan, who won the Samuel Johnson Prize for her book on Versailles and has recently written lots of other books. We talked about, I didn't even realise history was a separate thing until I went to school and started being forced to learn about Anglo-Saxon houses. And at that point, I realised it was something you could study, and I took it all away, and I've been lucky enough to work at the BBC and elsewhere and make programmes things ever since. And during the course of that career, I have realised that people are obsessed with anniversaries. They have an enormous connection with anniversaries. Perhaps not hugely surprising, because we are all obsessed by a strange anniversary, our birthday. We are obsessed with the anniversary of the birth of Christ, Christmas. We're obsessed, of course, rightly, with the anniversary of the end of the First World War, which we marked this weekend. And anniversaries give shape to our year, they give meaning, and I think they provide us with a moment that connects us with the past. It's a lens through which you can see the past. And I've been talking to many of the other distinguished journalists here at lunch, and we all agree it's so remarkable. You can tell someone about the sinking of the Titanic on any other day of the year, and they don't really care. But if you tell them about it exactly today, that the Titanic hit that iceberg and just after midnight it then slipped below the icy water of the North Atlantic, people are invigorated by it. They find it fascinating. I don't know why. I'm in a way not the audience for this book, because I find history interesting on every single other day of the year. But many people find it just very easy to connect with the first day of the Somme, particularly on the anniversary of that day, on the 1st of July, when 60,000 young British and Empire troops were killed or wounded in one day. And so I thought I would write a book, and during the course of making programs, I've made programs all over the world, from visiting Viking churches in Greenland to pursuing the last great gold rush into Alaska and northern Canada in the late 19th century, to ferreting around in previously unexcavated tombs in the Terracotta Warriors complex in Xi'an in China, and down to New Zealand in the footsteps of Captain Cook and looking at some of the Maori wars down there. During the course of that, I have entered, I've sort of built up this vast database with seemingly no purpose at all until the idea of this book came along. And I've just tried to therefore write a summary of lots of important things that I've come across that I feel collectively give you a little bit of a sense of world history and how we got here, History is, after all, everything that's ever happened. It's everything that's gone before. It's the reason we are sitting here in a mixed age, mixed gender, mixed religious, mixed political gathering, whereas in so many other parts of the world that would be unimaginable. It is a reason why we live in relative peace in the UK for the moment, and whereas in Syria, not too far away, they're engaged in bloody civil war. It's the reason for Trump and Brexit and Korea and all sorts of other things. I'm sure we all agree the importance of history. And I think if you, and all, but also in this book, I've tried to give a sense of literary history, social history. The older I get, the more interested I am, possibly because of the times we live in. I'm more interested in the technology, the engineering. I'm less interested now in Palmerston and Napoleon and Caesar than I once was, and I'm more interested in Brunel and Marie Curie and George Bezos, who started Google. I think if you look at the things that are shaping our world today, the things that we are walking around with these supercomputers in our pocket, there's more computing power in these phones than there was on the Apollo mission that took us to the moon. And I think, so if you look at those influences, I think they're coming from the pens of engineers and thinkers rather than the great generals and politicians and statesmen and women of the past. So I do a lot of that. One thing that I've learned, this book has now been, it's not launched yet. It launches later this week, I've done one event and this is the second event. And I've realised something that all anyone does: they pick up the book and they go, "That's nice." They look at the front cover, they open it, and they look at their birthday. Most remarkable. And it didn't occur to me. It's so weird. You don't think, I spent years working on this book. It didn't occur to me the only thing people can use it for is look at their birthday. And so I will ask a few people to shout out birthdays in a second. But I should say that today is quite an interesting day. It's an event that many people might not be familiar with. It's the famous, it's the sort of closest Britain, I think, has ever come in documented history to genocide, ethnic cleansing. Because, you weren't expecting that, were you? Under Ethelred the Unready. Well, I mean, it's still bad. I mean, it might be 1,000 years ago, but it's not great. Ethelred the Unready, who was a very, very useless king, unlike his... I'm afraid he was. I can't stand. I mean, he was up against fairly stiff opposition. But anyway, Athelstan would have dealt with Swain Forkbeard. I'll tell you that much. Anyway, so Ethelred the Unready decided that the Viking fleets were back, using the Isle of Wight as a nest of piracy, robbing and raiding up on the south coast, on the coast of Essex, as I mentioned earlier at the start of the talk. And today, Ethelred decided that what he would do was secretly organised for all the Danes in England to be killed. And it became known as the St. Bride's Day Massacre. And suddenly, spontaneously, all the English rose up and killed the Danes that happened to be living among them, perhaps as mercenaries, traders. There were Danes, of course, who'd settled and were living in a sort of uneasy relationship with their Anglo-Saxon neighbours, and they were massacred. We don't know how successful this was, but we know we have evidence from one church in Oxford. The Danes they all gathered in a church to protect themselves, barricaded themselves in, and then the Anglo-Saxons, the English, set fire to the church and burnt to the ground. And we know that because we have a charter re-establishing the church a few years later. So it was a monstrous act of criminality and genocide. And even worse, it was a mistake. Because surprisingly, the Vikings didn't take very well to this, and they invaded the country shortly after and got rid of it, Ethelred the Unready, and completed the conquest of England that eventually led to the kingship of Canute, who died yesterday. But so there you go. So I thought it would be, I'm thinking anniversaries constantly at the moment, it's a nightmare. I'm trapped in this world. I keep rattling through all the anniversaries. But just quickly shout out one or two birthdays and I'll see if... 27th of November, it's coming up, so that's a good one. I'm glad we got that one. I should know that. I should know at the top of my head, but I don't. Here we go. Oh, you're very lucky. Very lucky indeed, on 27th November. On this day in 1620, the English crew landed in North America for the first time from the Mayflower. Pilgrim Fathers landed first time. There you go. Which is quite important. I mean, the point is, I want each day to be surprising and interesting, but I also want it to, nearly every day should tell us something about the world that we live in today. And the English and British conquest of North America, I think, remains one of the most important single facts in world history. And you'd have to take my opinion for that. Bismarck said that as well. Go on, anyone else quickly? Here we are, everyone's two. That's extraordinary. Two people say the 19th of December. So, well, you can all agree on that. Are you twins? Yeah. Okay, here we go, 19th of December. Ah, yes. Yes, William Pitt. William Pitt the Younger was appointed Prime Minister today by George III, a completely bizarre move. 1783, and he was 22 years old, I think it was. And interestingly, it was called the Mince Pie Administration because everyone assumed it would be over by Christmas. Not the first or the last time we've heard that phrase. It'll be over by Christmas. I wish I'd put that gag in the book now that I quickly read it and it's not in there. And he was Prime Minister, obviously, with a short break until 1806. So, in fact, March 23rd. Yeah, you may.
Massive day.
So, let's see, March 23rd. Here we go. Barry Cryer born. Well, actually, Barry, it is, funnily enough, a very interesting, it is a rather important day and one that we should all be thinking about at the moment. Today, in 1833, a charismatic politician with authoritarian tendencies and an uneasy relationship with facts used a terrorist atrocity to pass sweeping legislation to ensure his own personal rule. So basically, Adolf Hitler today in 1933 used the Reichstag fire, which had occurred the day before, to basically entirely dismantle German democracy. With Barry. Long, long before Barry was born. I don't know why. And that did not end well. That did not end well. Well, I think I probably need to let everyone... Okay, let me quickly do it. 15th September. Here we go. I know, I should have realised this was the flaw in the plan. Here we go. 15th September, which of course is Battle of Britain Day, but I didn't want to put Battle of Britain Day because I put that somewhere else. So, well, this is rather good. Oh, we've been talking about this today. This is the most... I mean, this is a big day. This is a day that echoes around the world. This is the day of the first intercity train journey on planet Earth, Liverpool to Manchester. The Duke of Wellington was on board the train. The first intercity, and the entire global rail network has basically grown from that short stretch of track between Liverpool and Manchester. And President of the Board of Trade, a man called William Huskisson, was desperately trying to get back in. In fact, yeah, he was desperately trying to get back in Duke of Wellington's good books. So he dashed across the track and he said, "Your Grace, I'm going to have a quick chat." And the reserve train smashed into him and killed him. It's not that funny. No, it's outrageous. Too soon. He was hideous. He was mortally wounded, died shortly thereafter. And so the opening of the world's first intercity train, first passenger carrying train, really. Don't start with railway historians about this, but it was also the first famous fatality, and that helped to boost its popularity. Everyone wanted to ride on it afterwards. Duke of Wellington was pelted with vegetables and things when he arrived in Manchester and had to retreat. He never went on another train again for about 10 years. He hated the whole experience. He was a brilliant general, as my dad may have told you last year, but he was a terribly bad prime minister. It hurts me to say that. He did, and before his first cabinet meeting, Duke of Wellington said, "Rather extraordinary meeting. I gave them their orders, and afterwards they wished to stay around and discuss them." And actually, I will finish on the Duke of Wellington. My favourite story about the Duke of Wellington. I'll finish it because it's such a beautiful expression. Duke of Wellington it is said that the Duke of Wellington had a social disdain for his intellectual equals. And an intellectual disdain for his social equals. And because he was incredibly grand and incredibly intelligent, he was therefore very lonely. But I've always liked that. It always sums him up very nicely. Thank you very much, everybody. That is my rather uncertain conclusion to that talk. But I look forward to discussing all your birthdays later on. Thank you.
For more about the Oldie magazine, Amber Lunches, go to theoldie.co.uk.